evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this meeting of the Plans Committee for Charnwood Borough Council. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that the meeting is distraction-free. In addition, please turn off smart speakers on phones, for example, Alexa, Siri, Cortana, etc., as these record conversations and this could be a breach of GDPR. Voting will be undertaken by a show of hands, for, against, abstain. Speakers will be called forward at the appropriate time by the chair and brought into the room and seated accordingly. They may stay in the public gallery for the debate of their item, but following that, they may be asked to leave by the chair to ensure continued social distancing. That isn't so necessary these days, though. The speaker's table will be cleaned in between uses. Speakers have 5 minutes each, and they will be timed by the Democratic Services Officer, and when you have 1 minute of time remaining, you will be advised. We do run a traffic light system here for speakers, which is down in the corner there, red, amber, and green. When it goes to amber, it means that there is 1 minute left. When it goes to red, is finished. Your speech is finished. We will ask you when you do come to speak if you would like to also be verbally advised by the Democratic officer that you only have 1 minute left. And just to let you know, before I carry on, that the Vice Chair, Councillor Bentley, and I will be sharing the presentation, the meeting tonight, as it's quite a long agenda, and we split it between us. There are 5 applications, and we have a number of speakers. Before I go through those, I would like to state we've had, for the committee, this is please, we have had late requests to speak from Tim Colby on application P212131-2, from Tristan John on application P220694-2, and from Tony O'Dowd on application P220694-2. Are those 3 people I've named, I've called, are you present? 2 of you present? If I call out the name, Mr. Colby, thank you. Mr. John, not here. Mr. O'Dowd, thank you. And to the committee, are you all in agreement that these people can speak, although they are late applications? Could I see a show of hands, please? All agree. That's unanimous. Thank you. I'll now move on to apologies. Have we received any apologies?
Through you, Chair. Apologies received from Councillor Gerrard and Councillor Snart will be substituting, and apologies also received from Councillor Forrest.
Thank you very much. Item 2 on the agenda. The committee is asked to confirm as a correct record the minutes of the meeting held on the 22nd of September 2022. Is everybody agreed? Thank you. The minutes of the previous meeting have been confirmed as the correct record and will be signed. Item 3, questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. A question has been submitted by County Councillor Max Hunt regarding the Garendon Park development. I believe most people have got a copy of this. The County Councillor Max Hunt question in 10 parts. He has received a written answer to them all, and he has indicated that he is very happy with the answers as presented. So there will be no discussion on that, and we'll move on. We now come to item 4, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest. Are there any disclosures of interest? First of all, I will ask the Democratic Services Officer, have we received any?
Yeah. Chair, none received in advance of the meeting.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley.
A couple of points. For 102 Main Street, Cossington, I did express concerns about the application at the last meeting, but I'm here with an open mind, so happy to sit on that. The other item was, application number 4 that involves applicant Everard's Brewery. I have professionally worked with Everard's Brewery before, but I haven't spoken to anybody about this particular application. I'm here with an open mind tonight.
Thank you. Has anybody else got any disclosures? No? Right, we'll now move on to the planning applications. And I'm going to pass to Councillor Bentley, who will take the first item and second item.
Thank you, Chair. So it's item number 1, application P/21/1446/2. It's an application by Spitfire Homes at 102 Main Street, Cossington. The officer who's going to present this is Mrs. Winson. Mrs. Winson?
Thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? That's great. All right. Good evening, everybody. The first item up for consideration today, as Councillor Bentley said, was for land at 102 Main Street, Cossington, which is a full application for 57 dwellings on the site. Members will recall, considering this item at the previous Plans Committee in September, and following a thorough debate on all the relevant issues, the item was deferred until this committee to enable further consideration of sustainability issues and further discussions with the Highway Authority regarding the bus service provision for the village. Here, just to refresh members' memory, is the site location in relation to Cossington and the proposed layout, which remains the same. As set out in your main agenda pack and in the extras report, Cossington is classed as an other settlement in the settlement hierarchy set out in policy CS1 of the core strategy. The development of the borough's settlement hierarchy is based upon the evidence gathered in the Charnwood settlement hierarchy, which identifies the ranges and services and facilities available within each settlement. The assessment sets out a number of essential and desirable services and facilities which are considered to be most important to meet people's day-to-day needs. The assessment sets out the requirement for an other settlement to have at least 2 of the identified essential services. In the case of Cossington, this requirement is met as the village benefits from a primary school and broadband provision. It's also pertinent to point out that the provision of a bus service is not an essential service as defined by the settlement hierarchy. Whilst a bus service would increase travel options for the village, the lack of a bus service does not affect Cossington's position as an other settlement in the hierarchy and does not make the village unsustainable. The village also benefits from a number of the desirable services and facilities criteria as set out in the assessment as well. It is the view of officers that it would be difficult to justify and sustain at a future likely appeal a reason for refusal based on concerns that the development would be unsustainable. With regards to the bus service as set out in your agenda pack and extras report, dialogue has been undertaken with the Highway Authority regarding the issue. The Highway Authority have confirmed that there are currently no plans by the private operator to reinstate the number 2 service. There are 2 options to provide residents of the development with public transport options. These are the provision of a demand responsive transport system or to pay the bus operator to extend the number 2 service. These options are discussed in full in your extras report and would need to be secured as a developer contribution in a Section 106 agreement. However, service at £200,000 per annum would not be fairly and reasonably related in kind and scale to the development. These contributions would therefore fail the test set out in the SIL regulations and cannot be secured. Whilst the final decision on SIL matters remains with the local planning authority, the highway authority is also of this view and has confirmed it will not support a reason for refusal on these grounds. Your exit report also contains further information received from the applicant, which is of some relevance. Whilst the number two bus service has ceased, residents of Cossington have the benefit of a weekday service to Loughborough via the Centrelink number 27 service, with the nearest stop being outside Goscott Nurseries to the west of the site along Syston Road. This is an approximately 10-minute walk from the site and within the 400-metre threshold set out in policy CS17. It is considered that this is of some benefit to the scheme, as commuters will not be solely reliant on the use of a car to access other areas of the borough. The site is also within proximity to Route 1 cycle and pedestrian network, which offers a safe and majority traffic-free route to the principal urban areas of Syston and Thurmaston. The park and ride facility at Bursill is also accessible via this route and is approximately 10 minutes away on cycle. As concluded in the extras report, these alternative transport options have some limited positive weight in the planning balance. So overall, the application has been assessed in accordance with the provisions of the development plan and the MPPF as set out on pages 34 to 35 of the main agenda pack, along with the contents of your extras report. As members will be aware, the relevant development plan policies to control the supply of housing land in the borough are out of date due to the lack of the required 5-year supply of housing land. The provisions of 11D of the MPPF are therefore fully engaged, which requires the local planning authority to carry out a tilted balance assessment of the planning application. In accordance with the provisions of a paragraph 11D, it's been concluded that the identified harms resulting from the development do not significantly or demonstrably outweigh the benefits of providing the additional housing in the borough at the time of such acute and critical need. And it's therefore considered that planning permission should be granted in line with the recommendations set out on pages 35 to 46 of your main agenda pack and pages 2 to 4 of the extras report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Winson. Excuse me. We have three speakers. The first is the applicant or the agent or developer, Joe Bennett, who's speaking on behalf of the agent. Second will be Penelope Weston Webb on behalf of Cossington Parish Council. And finally, Councillor James Boland. So, Mr. Bennett, if you could take the seat down here for me, please. Just to remind you that after you've spoken, you can either leave the meeting or stay in to continue to watch and listen to the rest of it. After 4 minutes, you'll see the amber light comes on, which gives you a visual indication you have 1 minute left to speak. Do you want a verbal indication as well that you have 1 minute left to speak, or you'll catch it in the corner of your eye? Lovely. Okay, so start when you're ready, but when you get to 5 minutes, I will have to cut you off. Okay, thank you very much. When you're ready.
Good afternoon, members, ladies and gentlemen. Following the previous decision to defer the application on sustainability grounds, extensive discussions have resulted in strong advice from the Highway and Planning Authority that a contribution from this site towards a bus service would not be proportionate and could not be justified in planning terms. Put simply, a development of this scale could not afford to support a bus service for the entire village, nor is one necessary to render this a sustainable location. Nevertheless, additional homes will ultimately improve the likelihood of a commercial service being viable in the future. This applies to other services in the village and will assist the viability of the Royal Oak Pub, for example, and it may encourage other small businesses to locate nearby in the future. All of this said, the site is within walking distance of an existing bus stop, which continues to be served by Centrebus, facilitating commutes to and from Loughborough. Members were not fully aware of this at the last committee meeting, but it does mean that the site is fully compliant with policy CS17, given that it's within 400 metres of an existing stop, something that members raised in September. Considering the apparent rural location, the site uniquely benefits from excellent cycle and pedestrian connectivity to nearby urban centres, including Thurmaston and the edge of Leicester using Route 1, a segregated cycle route and pedestrian route. We ex- accept that not all residents will utilise these opportunities, but the site is very well placed to take advantage of them nevertheless. So in respect to the previous deferral reason, your officer's report concisely and clearly sets out a recommendation that this application should be approved. One further point from the last meeting was a query from a member about the agricultural land classification of the site. This has been reviewed further, and Natural England's mapping shows that the site is grade 4, which is poor. And according to Natural England, that means land with severe limitations, which significantly restricts the range of crops or level of yields. It is therefore not the best and most versatile land. We would also ask members to consider the positive way in which Spitfire Homes have engaged with this application at an early stage with the pre-app process and with the public consultation exercise. And they've later engaged in further meetings with the parish and borough council, and that's resulted in a sizeable contribution towards the improved village hall, which is something I know the parish have worked on for some time. Further, the design is to a high standard and takes genuine and meaningful cues from the local area. The proposals have been shaped by your own landscape and urban design officers, a collaborative approach that will provide a quality addition to Cossington, which respects its heritage. And whilst I did touch on this last month and completely appreciating the concerns that the parish and some locals have in terms of flooding, this has been comprehensively assessed by Severn Trent Water, the lead local flood authority, and Spitfire's own drainage engineers. The development would not be impacted by flooding, nor would it increase the risk of flooding nearby. The surface water drainage strategy includes swales, a large attenuation basin, and it will result in a passive management that will mean that water is only released from the site when it's safe to do so. We'd also like to briefly remind members of some of the key benefits of the proposed development, which is that it's a gas-free development. There'll be no gas boilers. Air source heat pumps will instead be provided, far better efficiency and lower running costs. Electric vehicle charging points will be included to every plot. Proposed development includes a bungalow, maisonettes, terrace, semi-detached and detached homes containing a good mix of market and affordable dwellings. 40% of the homes will be affordable, providing affordable rent, shared ownership, the proportion in line with housing officers' comments. There'd also be £700,000 worth of financial contributions towards libraries, healthcare, waste, open space, the community village hall project, and education provision addressing known capacity issues. The development will therefore more than offset its impact. We'd also respectfully urge members to consider the council's 5-year supply, which is now hovering just above 3 years, repeatedly referenced in appeal decisions and is therefore a material consideration of some substantial weight. In these circumstances, and as your officers set out, the MPPF only permits refusals where the adverse impacts would significantly and demonstrably outweigh the benefits. This is a really high bar that is simply not met, so the development should on that basis be approved. In summary then, these proposals benefit from no objection from the lead local flood authority, environmental health, Leicestershire Police, Highways and Severn Trent Water. The site has been demonstrated to be within a sustainable location, is poor quality agricultural land, and would make a positive contribution to the council's housing supply. I'll end by thanking officers for their hard work on this application. We agree with their assessment that the application should be supported. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. If you'd like to either take your seat or you want to stay in and listen to the rest of the debate. Okay, thank you. Next we have up Penelope Weston-Webb on behalf of Cossington Parish Council. Once again, before you start, would you like a reminder verbally when you're at 4 minutes, or will the amber lights suffice? Okay, right, thank you very much. So when are you ready, start.
Good evening, Chairman, councillors and officers. I'm Chairman of Cossington Parish Council and have lived in Cossington all my life. As from the 4th of September, our bus service has been cancelled. Our nearest shop is at Rothley with the junction of Loughborough Road and Cossington Lane, which is up a hill. There are no street lights from the junction with Main Street along Platts Lane and Syston Road, and the pavements are very narrow in places and uneven. The other shops are up a steep hill in Sileby High Street. The centre bus, number 27, is down Platts Lane or Syston Road with no lighting, bad pavements, a no pavement at all on the far Syston Road. Without a bus service, villagers will not be able to visit a post office, hospitals, opticians, doctors, dentists, shops, children's nurseries and church, other than the Church of England or Saints Church in Cossington. Villagers in Cossington will be unable to visit Leicester or Loughborough unless they have a car. The train station in Sileby is too far for Cossington for people to walk to, and access is impossible for elderly, disabled, wheelchairs and pushchairs. Planning permission has been granted recently for 130 houses near Derry's nurseries, 170 in the green belt between Cossington and Sileby. This application is for 57 houses, making a total of 357 new build, whereas at present Cossington has 180 houses, including the outlying farms. Elderly people in Cossington who are unable to drive will not be able to visit Leicester, Rothley, Sileby or Loughborough. As stated at the last planning meeting, we suffer from flooding when the village roads become impassable. Main Street near the proposed site is very narrow. The pavements are not wide enough for pushchairs and wheelchairs. There are no street lights in this area. Our primary school is already full to capacity. Some children who live in Cossington are unable to get places in the school. Students going to Humphrey Perkins, which is the catchment school, are unable to travel by bus now. The Kinge buses have been cancelled. The government keeps stating that people should use cycles, but our roads are too narrow for cycle lanes. With the proposed three developments of 357 houses, this will probably give us an extra 700 cars per day, plus delivery vehicles, etc. We would expect most of the houses will have at least two cars or work vehicles, plus any for children who can drive. Most of Main Street houses do not have off-street parking, and certainly Cossington Road Sileby has excesses on road parking. Beside the number of new houses using the road, people who live in Barrow-on-Soar, Cossington side of the brook in Sileby, and work in Leicester will have to use cars and come through Cossington. The cycleway that is mentioned is along Platts Lane, where there is no lighting and the pavements are very uneven. We've just been advised by the Babington charity, who own the allotments, that they have two becoming available, and therefore we would not require any more. In fact, we do not have any room for more allotments or sports facilities. Our recreation field is rented out long-term to Sileby Rugby Club, and there are no other suitable sites. I would ask you on behalf of the residents and the Parish Council of Cossington to please refuse this application.
Thank you very much. Finally, the ward councillor, James Poland. Ms. Poland, would you like an indication verbally when you have 1 minute remaining, or are you happy with just with the lights? Okay, start when you're ready. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and good evening, members. As members will recall, this application was deferred from the last meeting because members were concerned about the sustainability of Cossington as a location to develop following the loss of the number two bus service, which is the only real bus service the village has. Since then, Leicestershire County Council has confirmed they will not ask for a contribution for the bus service as part of the Section 106 agreement. We are therefore left in a situation where the concerns of members last month have not been addressed and must therefore presumably remain. To briefly recap, over the summer, Kinch Bus has announced they were changing the route of the number two bus, which would henceforth only go between Loughborough and Sileby, and the frequency would reduce to one bus every 80 minutes. Cossington therefore lost that bus service completely. The applicant in the extras report refers to the number 27 bus serving the village. As has been said, that only skirts around the edge of it and runs only once a day in each direction on a weekday towards Loughborough at approximately 7:35 in the morning and back towards Leicester at 6 p.m. At no other times does that bus run, nor does it run at all at weekends, nor at all on bank holidays. This, therefore, can't be seen as a service which residents could reasonably use as an alternative to owning a car for daily life. This means that residents on the new development would realistically have to walk over a mile to join the 126 or 127 at Rothley, or approximately 1.3 miles to join the new end of number 2 bus service in Sileby. Cosington, as you've heard, has no shops, no doctor's facilities, other than the pub, no facilities really of any kind. The officer's report states the assessment defines other settlements as those which have some services and facilities to meet the day-to-day needs of the community. The requirement for a settlement to fall into this category is clearly set out in the assessment as having at least 2 essential services and facilities within the settlement. The report says Cosington benefits from a primary school and a broadband facility, which therefore meets the minimum criteria for an other settlement. However, the officer's report also highlights the fact that local primary schools are oversubscribed and cannot take additional children this development would generate. The report says Cosington Primary School has a net capacity of 105, and 159 pupils are projected on the roll should this development proceed, a deficit of 54 pupil places after taking into account the 16 pupils generated by this development. The overall deficit, including all schools within a 2-mile walking distance of the development, is 86 pupil places. The 16 pupil places generated by this development cannot, therefore, be accommodated at nearby schools. It is therefore not consistent to say Cosington still qualifies as another settlement because it has a primary school, if that primary school is full and therefore couldn't take the children from the new development anyway. For the purposes of assessing this application, therefore, it can only be said that Cosington has 1 of the essential services where 2 are required for it to still qualify as another settlement. In regards to the secondary school places, the report says the following. The site falls within the catchment area of Humphrey Perkins School, which has a net capacity of 900, and 1,042 are projected, should this development proceed, a deficit of 142 pupil places. Schools cannot, therefore, accommodate the new development. Added to this, in the case of the secondary school, there is no longer a bus service from the village to the school, which is nearly 4 miles away. Schooling, therefore, becomes a significant factor weighing against this application. Other essential services listed in the report are a food shop and access to employment, and without a car or a 2-mile walk each day, residents on the new development would have access to neither. I ask members to consider this question. Would it be possible to live on this new development without access to a car? Without a car, residents would be looking at a 2-mile round trip to the nearest food shop, the return leg presumably while carrying their shopping. A mile each way to the bus stop, unless you're going to get the 2 buses a day, 1 in each direction that we've referred to get to work and back. The 2.6 mile round trip to the doctors. If you're a mother with young children, disabled or elderly with mobility issues, you are not realistically going to be able to live on this development unless you can drive. And that shows the site is an unsustainable location to build. For this reason, I believe the application should be refused this evening on the grounds of unsustainability. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Winston, would you like to come back on what's been reported or presented by the members of the public?
Thank you. Just to pick up on a few of the points that these speakers raised, just to clarify, just to go through them in not necessarily the order they were raised, but go through them. The issue with flooding was raised, and the issue with wider flooding issues in Cossington, the wider area. Members debated that at the last September Plans Committee.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Winson. Right, so far only one person's indicated the one, so now two and three. So you're first, Councillor Lowe, then Councillor Snart, then Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. I believe we was right in deferring this item from the last meeting, and I'd like to thank the officers for taking it away and asking the questions of the relevant authorities. I'm disappointed with the result we got, but I was half expecting that anyway, to be fair. I still have questions on whether this is sustainable as an application, but I believe we've asked all the questions that we needed to ask. We debated this long and hard at the last meeting, and I think most of us were there. I feel for the residents of Cosington, but I don't think I've got any reason to refuse this, so therefore I would now accept officer's recommendation. I propose that, Chair.
Thank you. And thank you, Councillor Capleton. Did you want to speak as well? Or? Okay, Councillor Snart.
Chairman, thank you so much. Could I just get some confirmations first? On the alternative bus service, we've heard just from one of the speakers that it only operates once a day. Could I just check that is correct? In the papers, on page 8, on the second paragraph, it talks about considering appeals, Shepstead and Cosington Road, the inspectors of the borough at the time, shortfall. Could I just check they're both in service centres and not other settlements? On page 9, the village also benefits from top of the page. The village also benefits from a number of desirable criteria and walking distance to service centre of Sileby. We heard tonight that it's probably a mile away, which I don't consider walking distance. Could I just check on that? And finally, on page 36 in the recommendations, this is recommendation A, highways, travel packs for the first occupation of each new dwelling to promote sustainable transport choices. Can I just ask why that's in there? And it's saying that we need sustainable transport choices. It doesn't look to me that we've got sustainable choices. So could we just actually check on that as well? And it would be interesting to get those information before I make a decision. Thank you.
Mrs. Winson, would you like to come back on that? Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I'm going to have a stab at the first two questions, if that's okay, Councillor Snart. you asked a question about the bus service and its frequency, and I think you said thought it was a daily service rather than a more frequent service than that, and I believe that is the case, which is why in the report we say that limited weight can be given to that. On the issue of the two appeals, it's page 8 of the agenda. You were asking about whether those appeals, the sites were within service centres rather than other settlements. I think what we're trying to allude to here in this wording is the way in which the inspector applied the logic to assessing harm rather than the fact that those were service centres. You know, we're not trying to make any comparison between Cosington and service centres. It's just the way that the inspector had articulated the harm and the tilted balance, the paragraph 11, you know, is there harm there, and is it significantly and demonstrable that outweighs the very positive benefit of, you know, granting permission. So it's just the way that the inspectors articulated that argument, and it shows the way that the inspectors approach these things when they come to deal with them at appeal. So that's what the thinking was around that reference. Whether the colleagues could pick up on the other questions that you raised.
Mr. Bennett, Mr. Snart, does that answer the question?
Sorry, Councillor Snart, could you just repeat the latter question just so we can be clear, please?
Yes, the two that have not had answers
for us, on page 9, it says walking distance to service centre of Sileby,
but
they're
denied that
it's
a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
You still consider that as, sorry,
I'm
still consider that walking distance. And then on page 36, on recommendations A, it says highways, travel packs for the first occupational of each new dwelling to promote sustainable transport choices. So we're talking about travel packs to make it sustainable, but we haven't got an actual bus service to actually do that. So it seems a bit strange.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. With regards to your first question about the distance to Salby being 1 mile away, officers have actually walked that just from Crossington to Salby to see whether it is something that is easily achievable. And the walk took just over 10 minutes to do that. So it is we do consider it reasonable for the average person to be able to walk into Salby and cycle into Salby, obviously, if they wish. It's not an insurmountable distance to cover. With regards to the issue with the travel packs, travel packs do not just cover a bus service or bus service passes. The travel packs are designed to promote sustainable travel options within an area. So it can be the information with regards to the local footpaths and the local cycle networks and that sort of thing. It's not just to provide information about or to provide a bus pass. That's not the sole intention of the travel packs. They can cover a variety of things. They are there to encourage alternative sustainable transport options. And obviously the ones that are available to this site, which will be the proximity to the cycle network and pedestrian access to those other areas as well, would feed into the travel packs in this case. Thank you.
Does Mr. Snark, is that to cover the questions?
I mean, it does say sustainable transport choices, not actual way we go. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The one thing for me is that the two essential desirable services, the two that really affect this are food shops and employment access. So each one of those, in my view, would actually have to have people getting in their cars to do that. Because I can't see people going to food shops for the smallest item to not actually walk, but get in their car and do that. So it is difficult for me, but I will listen to a few more submissions to this, and I'll make my decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley?
Thank you, Chair. I mean, the applicant did make a big play about having air source heat pumps in the houses. Well, that's a standard requirement for building regs, basically, so it's not particularly anything over and above the norm, but that's not part of remit tonight. It is the bus service, and the location of the bus stop that does give me concern. Having driven past it on my way in tonight, there was considerable surface water around that area, spray and that sort of thing, which will put people off using that location. Pavement, I've not had a chance because we've only just found out about this extra bus service, I think, in the extras report that came out fairly late. I mean, I didn't go on, unfortunately, I couldn't make the site visit today, but I don't know whether members did take the opportunity to walk from the site to the bus stop to see what it was like. I'd like to listen to anyone's opinions on that. The officers do talk about some of the healthy officers being able to walk to Salby, which I think is probably possible, and I don't disagree with that. I suppose it's when you get to people, not necessarily wheelchair, but other disabilities, that side of things, or people who aren't really healthy and thick, or people thick. Fit even, or people with walking with children because they've got no childcare, so having to go to walk there with to shop and what have you. Education, I mean that is a bugbear because we don't have the places in the local schools. There is talk about I think money's going in some of the schools, possibly, we don't know, but then there's going to be other developments, particularly on the Humphrey Perkins School, that are need to be factored in. So we don't know what the other factors in are on that. Sustainable travel packs, we did ask last time if we could find out exactly what these include, but nobody seems to have been able to give an answer on that. I mean, when you say sustainable, does it give, rail links into Market Harbour or London, or we don't know exactly what's on there. So I still think, I still have concerns over this, to be quite honest with you. I will listen to what other people say, particularly members today who have been on the visit, who had walked from the site to the bus stop to see what their thoughts are.
Thank you, Councillor Grimley. I don't see any more hands up. I'd like to make a comment that I think people, if somebody was looking to buy and live in that area, they'll be familiar with what it is that they're actually buying and what facilities are available to them. So therefore, they presumably make the decision based on what they see in front of them. Did you want to come back then, Councillor Grimley?
Yeah, exactly. On the point you just made, what I would say is recently I've had a lot of complaints from people who have moved to the Barleyfields estate in my area because they think they've got a village school they can move to, and they're told, no, you haven't got a village school you can move to. You have to go to maybe Syston, or even Syston schools are filled at the moment. So people don't know exactly what's there when they move there. They have a bit of a idealistic view, but no, people don't know exactly what's there. Well, that's relevant, or I don't know, but I don't know if your comment was relevant, to be fair.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to bring in Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Vice-Chair. Just to respond to some of the points that Councillor Grimley has raised there and some concerns that he's got about this application. He said that there are no places in the local schools. He's got some concerns about travel packs, and he just referenced the Barley Way scheme there. Again, concerns from new residents about there not being school places. The report does make it clear that this development will create a need for school places, both primary and secondary. And a contribution is made, as requested by the local education authority, towards the improvement of local schools. So the impact of the development will be mitigated in providing spaces for pupils at the appropriate time as this site is built out. Now, of course, when these developments are brought forward, the contributions towards the schools aren't usually made at the point that planning permission is granted, or indeed when the first house is completed and the occupants move in. Very often, they are key points in the delivery of the development over time. And that is entirely in accordance with the SIL regulations. And what actually the local education authority needs in terms of managing the cohorts of pupils that are coming forward over time, and when they anticipate space to be available, and when they need that mitigation to bite and for new classrooms to be built. So there's nothing unusual in a school not coming forward immediately after the first occupants in a development. further information about how this works can be provided by the local education authority if you want to take it further with them. So that's the first thing I'd like to say. In terms of travel packs, they are intended to provide a collection of information about alternatives to use the car. They're a measure to help inform people, to make them aware that there are ways that they can get about without having to use the car as a first point, as a first option. That's all they are. They're a binder of information, if you like, about, as was mentioned earlier, recreational routes, cycle routes, places where you can park your cycle safely, about things like park and ride opportunities, dial a ride, and all these things in a single place in a bundle that's provided to the householder. And for a very relatively modest sum of around £50 per house, they are a useful information source. They're not the same as bus passes. That's a different thing altogether. So I think it's important just to clarify that. And I do take the point that, this site, if there isn't a bus route, then that makes it harder for people to access services and facilities. Yes, I think we'd all, welcome a bus service that was, a half-hourly service to Salby or elsewhere, but that's frankly not commercially viable. and there are alternatives, you know, cycling, walking. It's not that far to walk to Salby. You know, so on balance, the advice officers are giving is that this is a site that is actually sustainable and one which can accommodate new development successfully. Thank you, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Campbell's indicated he wishes to speak, and unless anybody else has got anything that we haven't heard before to bring to this discussion tonight, I'm going to close this, the speakers with Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to say, I wasn't happy before, and what I've heard tonight, I'm still not happy with it. That's just what I want to say, really.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so it's been proposed by the way, Councillor Lowe, there's two parts to this recommendation, recommendations A and B. You happy with both parts? You are? You're happy with that? Thank you. It's been seconded by Councillor Capleton. You're happy also with recommendations A and B? I'll take both of them together. Can I have a show of hands, please? Those against? And any abstentions? Okay, so I make that 8-4. Four against, no abstentions. So the application is passed. Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Winson. You've escaped earlier than expected. Oh, you haven't. Oh, apologies. Next item is going to be presented by Mr. Akram. This is P/21/21312. Mr. Akram.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, all. Item two brought forward for members today is land at Peasel Farm on Ratcliffe Road in Salby. It's an outline application with all matters reserved except access for the development of up to 175 dwellings with associated infrastructure works, access, landscaping and open space. The application is presented to the Plans Committee in line with the Council's constitution and also calling procedure at the request of Councillor Andrew Paling and Paul Murphy. Members' attention in assessing this application is also drawn to the provisions of the extras report. Okay, moving on. In terms of site location, which outlines the site in red, located southwest of the recently constructed highway known as Excelsior Way, west of Ratcliffe Road and to the southeast of the settlement of Salby. In terms of area of view, the application site is currently used for agriculture purposes and it is situated within the open countryside. There is a field drain bisecting the two fields on site, which runs from a south, which runs from northwest to a southeast across the site, discharging to unnamed watercourse. The unnamed watercourse runs to the southern boundary of the site. Application site is situated within flood zone 1, in terms of ground levels, if the site rises from the southern corner to a high point at the northern corner of the site. In terms of the surroundings, part of the site, part of the southern site boundary is shared with a residential dwelling at a residential dwelling on Ratcliffe Road, beyond which is arable fields to the south and east. Members would also be aware from the site visit and committee report that the northwestern boundary adjoins partly constructed residential development known as Ratcliffe Gardens, which otherwise piece of phase one of the piece of farm development. There's also consent for the conversion of existing farmstead and construction of new buildings for commercial uses, which currently appear to be used as construction compound associated with a wider residential development that is under construction. This slide also gives you an overview of the surrounding area, such as adjoining roads, where the local centre is, the park, and the piece of farm phase one development. In terms of the nearest heritage asset, is a locally listed cemetery chapel building situated to the north of the site on Cemetery Road. The site is located approximately 1 kilometre away from Sileby Village Centre and Conservation Area. The site is also defined outside the limits for Sileby, as defined by the local plan policy. But it's worth noting that the application site is adjacent to the southern edge of the defined limits of development within the Sileby neighbourhood plan and the emerging local plan. In terms of some of the actual photos across the site, this slide shows the photo taken in the southeast direction from the newly constructed Ratcliffe roundabout junction overlooking the application site itself. And this one is taken from the southeast, from the northwest direction towards the new recently built dwellings at Ratcliffe Garden, which is phase one of the piece of development. And this is taken from Ratcliffe Junction, the roundabout junction of the application site. And this is taken from the actual open space and the actual suds area for the first phase one piece of farm that overlooks the actual western parcel. And then you've got the eastern parcel on this side of the application site. As far as the actual turning to the proposal, as mentioned earlier, it's an outline for residential development of up to 175 dwellings with associated infrastructure. All matters are reserved other than access. The indicative plan shows open space, green infrastructure, including landscaping, continuation basins, as situated to the north and south of the site. The indicative plan also shows enhanced tree planting to Ratcliffe Road and the southern boundary of the site to provide softer rural edge. The plan shows connecting roads, pathways, perimeter blocks within the site, also providing connectivity to the existing housing development open space area to the north. In terms of site access, the previous implemented permission for the phase one piece of farm included a site access roundabout, which has been constructed together with the internal access road to the north, adjoining the application site known as Excelsior Way. The access plan shows the same access from roundabout and new constructed road, which will be used for the application site. The detailed plans shown on this slide shows one vehicle access to the site from Excelsior Way in the form of a priority T junction, which is approximately opposite existing farmstead buildings. This slide just shows the wider context of the site with the inclusion of the previous phase known as Ratcliffe Gardens. It also shows a cycle pedestrian connectivity to Ratcliffe Road through phase one, which which is dotted line in orange. Moving on to, in terms of the material considerations, as they which are detailed within the planning committee report. As members are aware that the plans are 5 years old and the LPA currently cannot demonstrate a five-year hand for housing land supply, which stands at 3.04 years. As a result, any policies which are directly related to the supply of housing are also out of date and cannot be afforded full weight. The shortfall of supply of housing sites also means that in accordance with the presumption in favour of sustainable development, paragraph 11D of the MPPF applies, and any adverse impact caused by the proposal must significantly and demonstrably outweigh its benefit for planning permission to be refused. The consideration of this application this evening must therefore involve a tilted balance judgment. Pages 67 to 69 of Plans Committee report provides detailed consideration in relation to the principle of development and related policies within the MPPF, Charnwood core strategies, safe policies within the local plan, and made an emerging Sowerby neighbourhood plan. It's worth noting that Sowerby is designated as a service centre within the policy CS1 of Charnwood core strategies due to the range of services and facilities that exist within the settlement, including a primary school, employment opportunities, shops, doctor surgeries, recreation, leisure facilities, and regular public transport to larger settlements. The proposal will not, in terms of this case, the application site is situated within open countryside, but adjoins the limits to development boundary as defined by Sowerby Neighbourhood Plan, and therefore the development adjoins the service centre for the purpose of interpreting policy CS1 of the core strategy. The policy, the proposal will not harm the overall strategy as set out in CS1, as it would provide, it would result in a provision of 175 dwellings in a sustainable location at a time when the local planning authority cannot demonstrate a five-year housing land supply, which would carry substantial weight in planning balance, which is and also it's a significant benefit of the development. This will be discussed in terms of the benefits against any conflicts within the overall planning balance at a later stage. As far as affordable housing, it is an outline, and 30%, which is 52 affordable homes, would be provided, which would comply with policy CS3 of the core strategy. The provision is also a significant benefit of the scheme, which should be given positive weight within the planning balance. In terms of from a landscape visual, the application was supported by a landscape visual assessment. There are no specific landscape designation for the site. The site is situated within open countryside. Landscape officer has been consulted and confirmed that the landscape and visual would have minor moderate effect and that it's capable of mitigation. The indicative master plan suggests that there will be a good enhancement to the southern hedgerow and generous tree belt, planting as a green corridor, tree planting to streets as design mitigation that would assist in integration into the site, into the surrounding landscape. This slide actually shows you in terms of the street hierarchy, whereby you have differences in terms of from a green street to other form of a neighbourhood kind of edge streets, and where the actual trees itself would go beyond the actual roofscape. So it's different form of street hierarchy which is identified. So this is explained within the tree design code that was submitted, which should achieve the desired outcome, providing sufficient spatial setbacks, sufficient tree root volumes, and to include street widths. That should break up the overall mass and built form of the proposed development and maintain the overall character, which would be secured by planning conditions to include landscaping scheme, landscape habitat, to achieve the desired outcome and mitigation. From a design and residential amenity and open space. The open space itself, that will be conditioned to provide a certain amount of, in terms of such as children's play and young people's play space. But as it is indicative, it could only be agreed at when it comes to reserve matter stage. There will be planning conditions associated with that, and anything, any on-site provision which cannot be provided will be subject to mitigation through planning obligation as part of Section 106. From a design and layout aspect, as it is outlined, with access only to be considered, the approval of design layout is not currently sought. A planning condition would secure design and appearance layout details to be agreed at reserve matters stage to ensure that the compliance with the design aspiration of the relevant national and local planning policies. From a residential amenity, while the application is outlined and the layout is indicative, it is considered that the form of development can be achieved in compliance with the council's and national policies without resulting in unacceptable harm to the amenities through the loss of privacy, separation distance, or overbearing to existing properties on Excelsior Way or Ratcliffe Road. The adjoining property, number 250, has a number of habitable windows that face and overlook the application site. The indicative plan shows enhanced woodland and tree belt along the shared boundary to this site. The separation distance between existing and the proposed dwelling would again need to comply with the relevant development plan policies and guidance, and these matters, again, could be addressed through the layout at reserve matters planning stage. From a highway safety side, the Leicestershire County Council have reviewed the plans and all supporting information to include technical reports and raised no objections to the proposal subject to a number of conditions and obligations. Members will be aware from the site visit that the main access to the site will be provided from Ratcliffe Road roundabout, and the proposed vehicle access to the application site will be formed by a priority T junction. The local highways authority are satisfied that suitable access can be achieved at the site subject to a number of safeguarding conditions. There have been technical notes to transport assessment that have been submitted in relation to junction capacity, traffic generation, and committed developments, which have been reviewed, and again, no objections have been raised, subject to condition for wherever the mitigation is required. As far as transport sustainability, Sowerby is a service centre with local facilities. The local services and facilities do include public transport accessibility, such as trains and bus service. A planning condition would secure details of pedestrian cycle linkage between the application site and previous phase one of the Peasel Farm and Ratcliffe Road to ensure sustainable modes of transport are promoted and form part of any future reserve matters application. Other conditions include travel plan, public transport strategy that includes obligations as for additional bus stops on Highgate Road and a suitable location at the emergency pedestrian cycle access at Ratcliffe Road, which is phase one of the Peasehill Farm development. In terms of flooding, the application site is within flood zone one. However, part of the site is indicated to be at risk of surface water flooding due to unnamed watercourse on the southern boundary. The application has been supported by flood risk assessment, drainage strategy. The number of mitigation measures have been proposed, including finished floor levels of proposed properties to be 150 mil above surrounding ground levels to mitigate risk of flooding. It also includes attenuation basins for discharge of surface water for both sub-catchment areas, which will ensure surface water is captured and released in a managed approach and not add to existing flooding issues. Environment Agency have been consulted, have raised no objection. LLFA have been consulted, and they've also raised no objection, subject to a number of conditions in relation to details of surface water and infiltration systems. In terms terms of other matters, page 77 to 78 of the Plans Committee report considers impact on heritage asset and ecology. And it concludes that that the proposed development is not considered to contribute to or harm its significance or setting of listed building, locally listed buildings, or the Salby conservation area. With the archaeological remains, a condition is attached for further archaeological investigations as per conclusion of that assessment. In terms of ecology, the application was accompanied by ecological assessment, technical notes, and the CBC Ecologies has confirmed that proposal's effect on biodiversity will require further BIA together with ecological mitigation and off-site compensation if necessary, which could be satisfactorily addressed through conditions or through secured through obligations as part of Section 106. As far as the trees are concerned, is that there would be a condition. There would be a condition attached for an agricultural method statement to protect existing trees and hedges during any construction work on site. Agricultural land, page 2 of Planning Committee report provides consideration in relation to best and versatile agricultural land. The supporting statement investigates, of the soil concludes that a small part of the site forms best and most versatile agricultural land with large majority within lower grade 3B having great soil wetness limitation due to high clay content and shallow depth to a slow permeable subsoil. This small loss of best and most versatile agricultural land is a factor that weighs against the proposal. However, this needs to be balanced against the council's housing land per supply position and other material considerations. As far as mineral resources, the site is located within the sand and gravel mineral safeguarding area, and supporting documents conclude that the site has no value or potential value or extensive volumes of underlying sand or gravel within the application site boundary. LCC Minerals consultation have been consulted and they've raised no objection to the actual proposal. As far as planning obligations are concerned, these are set out on page 83 to 85 of the Plans Committee report, which have been determined as SIL compliant, so they are necessary to make the development acceptable in planning terms and directly related to scale and kind. The development would provide a significant amount of contribution as part of Section 106 to include education, open space, and so on. These have been agreed by the applicant. As far as planning balance, as there is currently an insufficient deliverable housing sites, this application is to be determined on the basis of paragraph 11D of the presumption in favour of sustainable development in the MPPF. This means that there must be adverse impact which would significantly or demonstrably outweigh the benefits for the permission to be refused. The development is situated within Salby, which is a service centre considered to be a sustainable settlement. The development would provide 175 units, of which 30% would be affordable units at a time when there is acute need for these, which is significant public benefit of the scheme and affords significant positive weight. There are no technical constraints related to highways, flooding that cannot be mitigated. Biodiversity impact, mitigation, net gain, and landscaping can be secured by way of conditions, reserve matters, and Section 106 legal agreement. There will be no harm to heritage assets or ecology. In terms of weighed against this is the conflicts of within the development plan, which sets out this spatial strategy for the borough. While the proposal will be contrary with the relevant provisions of SAVE policy CT1 of the Charnwood local plan, however, policy CS1 is far the most important policy in the determination of this application, as it seeks to encourage new residential development within and adjoining Salby. The proposal is in conflict with the Salby neighbourhood plan. However, its policies are over 2 years old, and one of the criteria set out in paragraph 14 is not met, paragraph 14 of the MPVF is not met, such that conflict with it is not regarded to be in itself significant or demonstrable harm. The application site is located within the open countryside. There will be some harm, such as a small loss of amount of best and worst agricultural land. Other harms, such as landscape character of the area, that can be mitigated with conditions to secure, amongst other matters, for an appropriate layout and landscaping. The impact of the proposed development on local infrastructure can either be offset within the application site or otherwise secured via commuted payment to improve facilities in the area. In conclusion, it's considered that there are no impacts of the development of this site that cannot be mitigated and that would be significant, demonstrably harmful, as to outweigh the benefit of providing the required housing land in a sustainable location. I would recommend that the application should therefore be supported, subject to appropriate conditions being attached and contributions being secured to support local infrastructure as part of Section 106 legal agreement, which are set out in Recommendation A and B of the committee report. Thank you.
Just before we finish, can you point out the adjustments in the extras report?
Okay. Just to actually highlight, in terms of there was adjustments within the extras report where there was, in terms of... Adjustments within the extra, sorry about this. There was adjustments in the extras report. As issue one was in relation to condition two, as approved plans, and in terms of that's amended to include the red line boundary plan, and also in terms of the illustrative master plan is included that. Rather than the development shall be carried out in accordance with approved details, with the illustrative master plan, that it shall be carried out with the principles set out within the indicative master plan. And as far as issue two was concerned, that was to do with the condition six, open space and the planning obligations, whereby you had a few typos within the actual condition and... The second aspect was that it was duplicated within the 106 for the on-site open space, and as a result, that the condition is modified to ensure that the on-site open space provisions go within the actual conditions, and the 106 they're actually omitted as part of it. And the third one was just again typographical error within the consultation comments that referred to just on-site leave, but you should have referred to on-site young children's play area as well as young people. And as far as in terms of the recommendation A, I don't know whether you got it to hand. Recommendation A would be that where you've got Charnwood Borough Council open space, anything with the parks, amenity space, natural and semi-natural green space, and combined provision for children and young people, they will be deleted. And as part of, in terms of the amended condition, it's just to do with the wording. So then you've got the two, recommendation B, which outlines what the condition would be for condition two and condition six for the open space. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Akram. We have three speakers. We have, is George Wastel here? Thank you. Speaking as an objector. Tim Colby on behalf of the agent, is he here? Thank you. And I have a statement to read out on behalf of Andrew Palin, who called this in, who can't attend the meeting. So, Mr. Wastel, if you could call you forward first. be seated. Mr. Wastel, you'll have 5 minutes to speak. After you've been speaking for 4 minutes, an amber light will show to your right. Do you want a verbal indication as well that you have 1 minute remaining? Okay, that's fine. So if you'd like to start when you're ready, thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for letting me speak to you as an objector to this development. I'm truly disappointed that this council, this local council, has taken this view. It's 3 years ago, I believe, when I was here before you, objecting to the initial Peace Hill development. I didn't think it should have been allowed then, and I don't think this further one should be allowed now. I'm a humble resident of Sailby. I see wonderful fields in the pictures. They're not going to be there, apparently. I don't have the fine words and the facts that some have been presented tonight, but what I would say is that my understanding is that we have a local plan and a neighbourhood plan. The neighbourhood plan, here it said, well, it's 2 years old now, but I would say, but it's only 2 years old now. The new one, my understanding is that it's with the examiner as we speak, but for them being on holiday, it may be further forward. So I understand that we need housing. I understand that the council needs to try and meet its 5-year planning needs. But I don't understand why local people aren't listened to more. The government set up these neighbourhood plans. Even yesterday in the Commons, they were talking about top-down planning decisions, not Whitehall decisions. Maybe all academic, given what's happened today. As a resident of Sailby, I see Sailby being continuously having to have development, large-scale development, going on year after year. Surely this has got to be considered to be unsustainable in the long run. We talk of the bus services. I believe that they are being scaled back rather than more being put on. The schools, Cossington have already argued about the schools. We want another 175 houses with associated children. They've got to get to school somehow. Where are they going to go? What are the answers to these questions? Section 106, I believe they're called agreements. Oh, yes, well, they're all very well and good. Do they actually happen? We don't get new schools built, as I understand it. We get a few classrooms perhaps stuck on, unless the developer, in the meantime, decides, oh, hang on, I don't think we can actually afford that. Let's go back to planning and have that thrown out. Anyway, that was my initial rant, as it were. But the facts are that I accept housing development is essential, but we shouldn't just put it where it's easier for the council to approve. We shouldn't just bow to where developers say, let's have it there. We should listen to the local people and what they have to say. I don't accept that the neighbourhood plan should be just walked over and is of no meaning to the local people. So I think Sailby deserves more than this. and I think that Salby has had enough. And so I would like to see this decision at the very least deferred until we know a bit more facts about this. Bus services, schools, how are they going to get to school? The neighbourhood plan, it's unfair to write straight over it. Fingers on the button by the looks of it, so maybe my time is becoming used up.
Sorry,
I leave it to you, you good
I'm
people.
I'm sorry, you have to stop there. You've had your 5 minutes.
Oh, thank you. You didn't give me a warning, but that's all right.
No, I asked you, if you, away. I asked I you sir, if you wanted a verbal warning. You said you were happy with your orange light.
I've got my rant out the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Tim Colby on behalf of the agent. So, Mr. Colby, as before, you have 5 minutes to speak. After 1 minute, the orange light will come on over your right shoulder in front of the officer there on the sits that on the end. Do you want a verbal indication when you have 1 minute remaining?
No, thank you. I'll be fine with the lights.
Okay, then. Thanks. Start when you're ready.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the applicant. As stated in the committee report, this site is located on the edge of Sowerby, which is a sustainable location for development, being a defined service centre, providing a significant number of jobs, shops, schools and public transport facilities, both train and bus. As a result of this sustainable location, the council has already approved 201 dwellings immediately west of the site. These are now mostly complete and the development is known as Ratcliffe Gardens. The proposed development would form phase two of Ratcliffe Gardens, closely integrated with the homes already built and sharing the same access from the new mini roundabout on Ratcliffe Road. This application has many benefits. Up to 175 new homes would be delivered, thereby helping to address the current absence of a five-year housing supply in the district. These include a range of house types, including bungalows and up to 52 affordable dwellings, for which there is an acute need in Charnwood. As shown in the report, no objections have been raised by the County Council as highway, education or lead local flood authority, and appropriate financial contributions would also be secured via a Section 106 planning obligation to enable improved public transport, highways, education, health, library and sports provision within Sowerby. The site adjoins both the settlement boundary and Ratcliffe Gardens Phase 1 housing to the west and is contained on all its other boundaries by Ratcliffe Road, mature hedgerows and a watercourse, so its development will not have a major impact on the landscape. There would be economic benefits in the form of construction jobs and generation of additional population and expenditure, helping to preserve the long-term sustainability of Sowerby and its jobs and services. And there would be environmental benefits in the form of enhanced green infrastructure, a net gain in biodiversity, public open space provision and the creation of a high quality landscape-led development with its own sense of place located at an important gateway and forming a logical rounding off to the eastern edge of Sowerby. We consider these benefits clearly outweigh any adverse impacts and would ask the committee to agree with the officer recommendation and support the application accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I have a statement to read out on behalf of Councillor Paling. Starts off with, first of all, I thank you for reading this out. This proposed development would be a blight on the surrounding land,
countryside, and I believe that this development would be overwhelming for Sowerby. In Sowerby, we are already experiencing overcapacity at our local schools and doctor surgeries. The infrastructure on our road networks are already operating at a maximum capacity, especially the King Street Junction and Mount Sorrel Lane Junction. Could the planning officer please explain the nearest bus stop that supports Loughborough and the surrounding villages in terms of distance from the proposed site? I would also request that what the nearest bus stop to support the number 2 service to Leicester and the distance from the site. In Sowerby, we have no industry that could support any further developments, and in this turn points more traffic on our roads. The proposed development would accommodate 175 new homes in times where we're seeing people unable to make repayments and mortgages be at an all-time high. Whilst recognising that CBC only have 3.04 years of land supply and more housing is required to fulfil demand, who is going to buy these houses with prices on the decline? I'm not too sure these are necessarily all relevant points, but I'm just reading what's been written. In terms of new housing, we have a major flooding issue in the surrounding villages, and this will only impact more traffic in Barrow-upon-Soar. If the application is successful, how long will the project take to complete? I truly believe that this development should be rejected on the above comments. And then he goes on to ask a question. Can I ask the Chair to ask the Planning Officer if Sowerby Neighbourhood Plan has been taken into consideration in this application? So I'd like to put all that and the comments made previously back to Mr. Akram. If you'd like to reply to that, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of number of points, what have been raised, the first one was about the Sowerby Neighbourhood Plan and why that has been taken into consideration. And throughout the report, it has been. There's various references in most of the sections within the report where the plan has been referenced some way or another. But when it comes up to whether the plan being 2 years old and the provision is not engaged, what we have to refer back to is paragraph 11D of the MPPF, which clearly is explained on page 69 of Planning Committee report. So in terms of that itself being to, if there's one of the criteria that it doesn't meet, which in this case it doesn't, so therefore the provision is not engaged as part of the actual neighbourhood plan. As far as the merging Sowerby neighbourhoods, the merging one, it is acknowledged that it is a material consideration as part of it, but at this stage, the consultation just expired in September, on the 9th of September, and as far as in terms of at the moment, it's not even at pre-examination stage, so therefore it could be afforded limited weight in the assessment of this application. So that's for the Sowerby Neighbourhood Plan. In terms of the second point, which was to do with the local schools and capacities and various other things, what the councillor as well as the resident raised, these are aligned as part of obligation within Recommendation A of the committee report, which is on page 83 and 84 and 87 and 88. There has been consultation regarding the application with various consultees, whether it is education, whether it is to do with the NHS and various others. So we which has resulted in requests to meet infrastructure deficits created by the development that include primary, secondary school, SEND contributions, which will be accommodated, which would be used to accommodate the capacity issue created by the proposal, proposed development, that's by improving, remodelling or enhancing existing facilities within the area itself. As far as in terms of allocation, recommendation A would specify where the actual money would be spent. So an example for education, like primary school funding, that would be spent within Highgate Community Primary School, but then there is or any other school within the early learning provision within the locality of the development itself. In terms of the council made a point about junction capacity, and he highlighted King Street Junction and Mount Sorrel Lane Junction. In terms of the highways, what has been submitted as a transport assessment and technical report, they do go with the junction capacity for various junctions, and that is detailed within the report, but also where there's a condition attached, for example, where mitigation is required, in this instance was High Street, Book Street, and Highgate Road, T Junction, which was considered as having a material impact, and the mitigation proposed was to replace that with a mini roundabout. In terms of the bus stops, the nearest bus stops, and page 80 of the Planning Committee report goes into details of the transport strategy and public transport, and it does talk about in terms of the distances of the bus stops and so on, and it also talks about in terms of the mitigation measures as part of any conditions and like a public transport strategy and a part of Section 106 agreement to provide additional bus stops. One would be on Highgate Road, north of Wellbrook Road, and the other one is towards the top of Peasehill Farm Phase 1, which is Ratcliffe Road Junction. So the other points in terms of people unable to afford payments on mortgage and other decline in house prices are not material considerations. From a flooding aspect, that's also being considered in page 81 and 82 of the Planning Committee report. And as specified, is that the proposal would include provision of two attenuation bases to the south. Other mitigations are proposed in terms of finished floor levels. But as far as the concertees are concerned, Environment Agency and LLFA, they've raised no objections subject to a number of conditions. That includes sustainable drainage, that includes in terms of infiltration system and various other things. So I think that's about it, or have I missed?
Okay, thank you very much. I've got four councillors now indicated that wish to speak. Councillor Ransom, I think you indicated you wished to speak first a long time ago, so you're first.
Thank you, Chair. I can understand why the Salby gentleman is concerned, but we're out on site today, and I think compared to other sites, this is a very well laid out site, already in progress, and it is outlining planning permission that they're requiring, that the builder's requiring. The one thing I want to ask the officers, how can the actual existing people with the Garden Leicestershire Health Authority and the roads access the money prior to the building? Do they have to wait till the houses are built to access the money, or can they actually apply before the houses are built so that the infrastructure of, we say, upgrading of health services and health wellbeing and schools particularly can be done prior to any house that's actually built? It's only a question. It's just a question I would like answered. The other thing is on page 100, at the erection of temporary directional signage, is it possible that we can make sure that this signage does not come down through the village, that it goes a sign posted from the A46 into the site, because that's just quite near to the site. It's just one of those things that then at the junctions that's been spoken about, if the committee is minded to give this permission, that the Salby people are then protected a little bit against heavy goods traffic. Thank you.
Would you like to come back on that now? Or Mr. Bennett?
Thank you, Vice Chair. Councillor Ranson, nice to see you this evening. Just on the issue of Section 106 stuff. In the recommendation there, you see the list of planning obligations which are set out there, which would be required to mitigate the impact of this development. These are heads of terms. The detail of how these will be brought forward is, if members are minded to approve this application, will be delegated to me and also the head of strategic support to negotiate with developer, and in doing that, what we're very mindful of is ensuring that the obligations meet the three tests in the community infrastructure regulations, and that means that, you know, it would be unreasonable for us to ask for things to come forward before they're actually needed on site. So what we do in the agreements is identify trigger points, you know, how, you know, when so many dwellings have been built or when so many dwellings have been occupied or before development has been built, depending on the nature of the obligation, what it's intended to do. So we have to be quite mindful. It is a negotiation between the planning authority and the applicant, and we do need to make sure that the 106 agreement is robust in terms of those SIL regulations. Hopefully that helps answer that question.
Okay, with regards to signage, this is informative. It's not a condition. It's informative by the Highways Authority. So it's for the applicant to actually bear to know, and in terms of trying to, it's more of a prior approval with the local highways authority, which is the county, rather than us, to actually liaise with them before actually trying to do any work.
Thank you. Next up, I've got Councillor Savage.
Excellent report. I can see no problems with this whatsoever. I agree with the page 86, the final paragraph completely, and I would like to propose we accept the officer's recommendations.
Is that is that recommendations A and B?
Yes, A and B.
Okay, thank you very much. Including the amendments. Thank you. Do I have a seconder on that? Thank you, Councillor Grimley. You're actually next up to speak.
Thank you, Chair. I do have a lot of sympathy with the objector and others objectors on this, but I think given the sort of location, Salby is a town. It is a service centre. It has got trains. It has got buses. It has got shops. Lots of shops. Lots of takeaways. It's unfortunate that we're here because the local plan had been delayed quite considerably in the past. Had we had a local plan in place, we probably wouldn't have our hands tied. So I think this is not in the local plan, just correct me if I'm wrong on that, or in the draft local plan. But in any case, it does. Tick all the boxes with the need. Unfortunately, I have to second this and agree with Councillor Savage on that.
Okay, thank you very much. Next is Councillor Gray.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Just first of all to say I'm in total agreement with Councillor Ranson and that we should have some infrastructure in place before the dwellings are occupied. To take that to a logical conclusion, you wouldn't expect people just to camp on the open space before the house is built. The other things are also important. But my main point, I'm going to lump them both together, are the trees and the biodiversity. I think it's really important that they're covered very thoroughly and that we don't just put money elsewhere, but that we make provision for existing wildlife that's already on and around the site and make sure that that's not harmed as well. I think that's really important. And it's also important that when the trees are planted, they are maintained and looked after be- estate near me, the Grange Park estate. Many trees were planted there and they were just left to wither and die. So can we please monitor that very carefully if possible? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Bennett, do you want to come back on that? Mr. Akram?
Right. In terms of trees and biodiversity, there are a number of safeguarding conditions and also obligations as far as the trees are concerned. There's an obligatory method statement which will protect any trees or hedges in terms of during any construction. So that is a pre-commencement condition which they would have to require details to be submitted as part of it. So there's also, in terms of a construction environmental management plan condition, which goes into biodiversity aspect in terms of trying to deal with the construction process. And then as far as biodiversity is concerned, because it's an outline, when it comes to reserve matters, they would have to do a updated BIA, biodiversity impact assessment, then any mitigation, then when it comes up to biodiversity, any net gain, if they can't achieve it, then there's an off-site contribution. All that mechanism is part of a Section 106 agreement. So, okay.
Okay. Next is Councillor Snart.
Thank you, Deputy Chairman. Observations, really. I'm just interested in page 67 and the bottom paragraph, which says the weight can only be given is limited in instances that limits to development have been breached on multiple occasions. I'm afraid that most of them have gone to appeal and they've been permitted. So it seems a bit of a strange situation to be in. The other thing I think, and I note, that it's recognised that over 4,600 homes have been committed in service centres already between 2011 and 22, with over 1,100 homes in Sowerby itself. So it seems to me that we have actually put a tremendous amount of houses above what we considered right for the local plan. So I do have some sympathy with the people within Sowerby. Could I just ask, on the emerging, I'm a big supporter of neighbourhood plans, and could you just get some information on the emerging plan? Does it give any indication of what numbers are likely to be of dwellings going forward?
Through you, Chair, if I may. The emerging neighbourhood plan, was that the question, Councillor Snart, as opposed to the current neighbourhood plan? Were you asking about the level of housing in the emerging neighbourhood plan?
I was just, there's a lot of cases where neighbourhood plans have not actually gone to the make sure that we can actually use the information
right.
within the plan.
Okay.
And I'm just wanted to know. Does that indicate that what the amounts of houses that should be going forward for Sowerby?
Through you, Chair. So members will recall that in cases where the council is unable to demonstrate a five-year supply, paragraph 11 of the MPPF is engaged, which says, where the policies are out of date, the most important policies for determining the application, where the local plan is out of date, planning permission should be granted unless any adverse impacts of doing so would significantly and demonstrably outweigh the benefits when assessed against the policies in this framework taken as a whole. However, where there is a neighbourhood plan in place for an area, the MPPF goes further. And it says in paragraph 14, where the tilted balance, as we call it, paragraph 11, is engaged, in those situations, and where planning applications involve the provision of housing, the adverse impact of allowing development that conflicts with the neighbourhood plan is likely to significantly and demonstrably outweigh the benefits, provided all of four conditions are met. so it tips it around the other way if there's a neighbourhood plan in place. The four conditions listed there, I won't go through all of them, but one of them is where the neighbourhood plan became part of the development plan 2 years or less before the date on which the decision is made. So what it's saying is if you may have a neighbourhood plan in place, but if it's more than 2 years old, then this special provision in paragraph 14 doesn't apply. So you are then just determining the application against the development plan, which still includes the Sowerby neighbourhood plan, but it doesn't benefit from that extra special protection that paragraph 14 brings. So you still have to weigh the policies of the neighbourhood plan in the planning balance to see whether the harm of development significantly and demonstrably outweighs the benefits of the development. So that's what we were trying to articulate in the report there. So, there are still policies in the Sowerby neighbourhood plan which weigh in the balance, and that's articulated through the report. And
I think Councillor Snart's question also picked up the question of the emerging refresh, the review of the Sowerby neighbourhood plan. And the problem with that is a different provision that also dilutes its importance, because it says until it's reached certain stages, it doesn't carry the full influence and clout that it ultimately will do. And in Sowerby's case, it's not in those final stages yet, so we can't treat it in that manner. This time next year, the situation may be different, but here tonight, it's immature.
Okay. Right, and we've had a proposer and a seconder, but I've got one last person that has indicated the wish to speak. That's Councillor Campbell. So, Councillor Campbell, if
you... Thank you, Chair. It's just a wildlife question, really. I mean, this council has been asking local firms to find out, putting swift bricks in around the town. Does the planning team ask developers to do the same? And will you be asking them to do the same in these new buildings?
Vice Chair, thank you. It's an RL application, and as is always the difficulty with them, all of the details aren't with us yet, of course. So what Mr. Akram was talking about earlier about there being a need to investigate biodiversity impacts and then come up with solutions. And if they can't come up with solutions, then they'll have to be off-site solutions. They will be amongst the solutions that they'll look at, but we're not there yet.
Will be, but this is an outline planning application, not the detail.
Could I just say, in terms of when the reserve matters come in, then often it's the detail will come through as part of it. But as part of this application, in terms of recommendation A, you would see that there's a within recommendation A, there is a biodiversity impact assessment and a reserve matters which could consider biodiversity mitigation enhancement scheme to the council for its written approval within any reserve matters. And then in terms of any updated BIA, the net gain, all that would come as part of any reserve matters, as well as there's obligation within the section 106. So there could. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so we've had a proposal. It's been proposed by Councillor Savage to accept recommendations A, B, and the additions and the amendments. And Councillor Grimley has seconded that proposal. Can I have a show of hands in favour, please? that 11-4, none against and one abstention. Thank you very much. I'm now going to propose that we have a 7-minute break, toilet break, back at, well, because that brings us back at exactly 7 o'clock. Ed, can you gee everybody up, please? We need to start.
Thank you very much. We're now moving back into presentations, and we move to item 3, application number P220967/2, and it is being presented by Mr. Joe Davis. Davies. And we will be having three speakers. Mr. Ian Smith, Karen Brightman, and Councillor Shepherd, who are all present. Right, so if you'd like to carry on with the presentation, Mr. Davies.
Thank you, Chair. The application site comprises garden land to the rear of 90 Chaveney Road in Corn, although the site will be accessed from the side of number 88, which is here. In terms of the actual site, permission is sought for outline planning permission to build a dwelling and a detached garage on land here, and the access would also be widened as a result of this. In terms of the outline planning permission, full details of the access, the layout and scale of the proposal have been submitted. However, matters regarding the specific appearance and landscaping of the scheme reserve matters that will be agreed at a later stage. The indicative elevation, even though appearances are reserve matter, indicative elevations have been submitted. That's the elevations of the proposed garage, and that's the elevations of the proposed dwelling itself, and obviously the scale is a matter for the outline planning permission as well. So the key considerations are principle of development, impact on neighbour amenity, impact on design, character and appearance, and impact on highway safety. So basically, in terms of the principle of development, developments within Corn, which is one of the more sustainable locations. scale, it's in keeping with what is in its nearby surroundings, which would be in line with policy. In terms of neighbour amenity, as you can see from the site plan here, the proposed dwelling would be a sufficient distance away from all neighbouring properties that it would comply with standards, so it wouldn't result in any loss of light or overdominance. And in terms of the windows, we've not really got any specific information of position of windows to the side and rear of the development. That's to be agreed at the reserve matter stage, but the front windows are all a sufficient distance away that they exceed the requirements set out in the design SPD, and those specific distances are outlined in the report. In terms of highway safety, the local highway authority have raised no objection to the proposed development and the widening of this access. They requested that sufficient visibility be provided, which has been provided and demonstrated on this plan. The local highway authority did, however, recommend a number of conditions which have been imposed on the which are recommended to be imposed. In terms of flood risk, sites in flood zone 1, so that shouldn't be an issue. And basically, with the council's current 5-year housing land supply position, can't see any justification for refusing the application that would outweigh the benefits of providing a dwelling in this location.
Thank you very much. And we have three speakers. Mr. Ian Smith. Good evening. I noticed you've been listening to previous speakers, so you know you have 5 minutes and there's a traffic light system. Would you like a verbal reminder when you have?
No, I think I'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
First, I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to speak at this hearing. I represent the views of 8 neighbours who have written to the committee to object to this proposal. We request that you reject the proposal based on the following criteria: the unprecedented overbearing nature of the principal building and the separate garage, and subsequent loss of amenity to the neighbouring properties. Secondly, the proposed development adversely impacts on the character of the area and on the amenity of neighbouring properties. The applicant or the council have not demonstrated otherwise. The illustrated proposal is extraordinary for a backland development. It is significantly larger than the Donham House. The height of the ridge is generally higher than the surrounding dwellings by as much as 4 feet. In terms of floor area, the proposed area is in excess of 5,000 square feet. The proposed garage and first floor studio is remote from the dwelling and would have a footprint of over 50 metres squared and a height of 7 metres or 23 feet. It would be the size of a small dwelling and be immediately adjacent to the garden boundaries of 4 properties. Additionally, the proposed width of the garage is the entirety of the fence line of 3 Budden Lane. Furthermore, and even though the officer's report states the garage would be 22 metres from the residence's rear wall, it does not take into consideration the overbearing visual impact that would almost certainly eliminate the accessibility to sunlight in the rear of the garden. This 7-metre tall storey garage block is clearly visually intrusive, and no material benefit of such a tall garage block could outweigh and harm the local character and the amenity of this and the other neighbourhood properties. Therefore, the proposed development is overly dominant, overbearing, and out of character with the surrounding area. It is extremely disappointing that the officer's report has given no consideration to this impact. To put this in context, amenity is a relative measure of an occupier's quality of life and enjoyment of their property. The proposed site and its surrounds consist of relatively large dwellings set in large gardens. Any erosion of such standards, be it by noise, privacy, loss of daylight or sunlight, or overbearing, will lead to a derogation of amenity for those occupants. In this respect, the front garden of the new dwelling is just 12 metres away from the rear garden fence of the donor dwelling, which will undoubtedly lead to intrusion and loss of privacy. There are no opposing elevations of dwellings of this size in the vicinity, and therefore the proposal is out of keeping. I can't find a single example of two large properties of this type in such close proximity anywhere in the vicinity. The applicant's agent has made much about the shortfall in housing due to the outdated Charnwood local plan and the so-called tilted balance to be applied under the National Planning Policy Framework. In this case, the balance is that between the provision of a large single dwelling in a backland setting against the harm that would undoubtedly be caused not only to the amenity of neighbours, but also to the setting and character of Chaveney Road and its greater surrounds. It's beyond question that Chaveney Road and Budden Lane are significant to the village vernacular. Their character and setting contribute greatly to the character of the village as a whole and therefore to the public realm. The local vernacular here is ingrained primarily by large detached dwellings in large tree-studded gardens with road-front orientation. Such dwellings are noted in the Corn Village design statement. There is no other tandem development of nature proposed on Chaveney Road, nor Budden Lane for that matter. If the proposal is approved, it would set a precedent for single-access tandem developments which, if widely taken up, would undoubtedly change the character of Chaveney Road and Budden Lane through the introduction of additional single points of access and loss of open space to the detriment of the character and setting of the area and the village as a whole. It is noted that the pre-application advice raised concerns in this respect, in that it was pointed out that the proposal could be out of keeping with the settlement pattern. The proposed development is overly dominant, overbearing, and out of character with the surrounding area, and the damage caused to the character and setting of Chaveney Road and its surrounds significantly and demonstrably outweigh any social or economic benefit of granting planning permission for a single dwelling in a backland location, even in the context of a shortfall of the borough's housing supply.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I now call on Karen Brightman on behalf of the agent. Did you want after the 4 minutes a 1 minute verbal warning?
No, I can rely on the light.
Okay.
Good evening, councillors, and thank you very much for letting me speak to you tonight. I would like to thank your officer for his comprehensive committee report, which sensibly recommends outline planning permission is granted for this new family dwelling within the development limits for Quorn. As you know, Charnwood does not presently have a 5-year supply of housing land, and I'm sure you are all fully familiar with what that means in terms of the planning balance and the way new housing developments such as this must be assessed. I would like to think, though, that this particular case, the requirement to apply the tilted balance as you must, isn't too troubling a prospect. This is, after all, a proposal that brings with it minimal, if any, harm, and offers the benefit of a new, sustainably located home at a time of housing need. The plot is a spacious one, allowing for the provision of high-quality landscaping and giving the opportunity to fully protect the amenity of existing neighbours. Although we have applied in outline, we have consciously included layout and massing at this stage in order to allow you to understand how the development would work and to provide reassurance that the building would fit in with its surrounding context and not be overbearing or cramped, as you can see from the plan up on the wall. We have also included an illustrative plan of the front elevation. This shows the care that our client will be taking to ensure his new home befits its position in the attractive village of Quorn, his home village. We do note that there have been objections to the proposal, and that this is why it is before you tonight. However, despite the many references to harm to amenity, we can see absolutely no conflict with the development plan or the adopted design guidance which informs it. All minimum separation distances are met and exceeded, and lower elements have been placed close to the most sensitive boundaries. We will, of course, carefully position windows when we seek approval for appearance so that there is no overlooking of neighbouring properties or loss of privacy for the new dwelling. Privacy, after all, works both ways. In summary, there would be no loss of light.
also looked very carefully at noise and disturbance as part of our submission. And as the planning statement that we sent in sets out, we are comfortable that because of the layout of numbers 88 and 89, and given the existing baseline, there would be no harm in this respect. We're also aware that concerns about the scale and location of the dwelling have been expressed. Again, we can see no conflict with the development plan. The massing of the new house and garage reflects neighbouring housing, and the site itself is surrounded by existing buildings. This locational requirement is as policy H5 of the neighbourhood plan dictates for this type of small windfill development. It is not tandem development beyond an existing ribbon of housing, and it would be wrong to classify it as such in reaching your decision. We offer reassurance that no significant trees are to be lost to facilitate the development. Only conifers and a holly bush stand to be removed. These are all garden trees and none of them are protected. We also remind you that our client intends to comprehensively landscape the site, ultimately improving biodiversity. As the committee report quite rightly recognises, the provision of this new high-quality home within a sustainable service centre village is a substantial benefit. No significant and demonstrable harm has been identified to outweigh this, including any conflict with the development plan. We politely suggest, therefore, that the proposal must, as a result, be approved without delay. Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Councillor Shepherd. Sorry, Councillor, the lights are fine with you. Do I get?
Yes, the light will be fine.
Okay, thank you very much. When you're ready.
Impact upon people.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Mr. Davies.
Yeah, just a couple of points in terms of the impact on neighbour amenity. Just to point out on page 115 of the report, it does, that's where it does set out those distances that I was referring to before. Number one, number two, something I've neglected to mention before we had the speakers is that in addition to the conditions proposed at the end of the recommended report, we're also proposing to include an approved plans condition just for the layout and block plan and the site location plan. That's at the agent's request, just in case they want to vary a condition later on. Yeah, it's that's in the extras report, the actual condition that we're proposing.
Thank you very much. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. I've had a look through. It does tick all the boxes on the various guidance that's in the Charnwood documents. I think it's leading design. Had looked at it fairly recently on another application for myself. It is an area. You know, there's no doubt. As I say, there are existing large houses. There's a large house. I think is the original property there. I just can't see any reason, particularly at the moment, why we are in the tilted balance on this, and maybe if we didn't have that, we could possibly look at other things, maybe, but I just can't see any real reason to refuse this. This will go before an inspector. Inspector would just say approved, and we won't get control of planning conditions on this, so I'm going to propose officer's recommendation.
Thank you. Did you want to speak, Councillor May? Okay. Councillor Snart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just for so clarity, could I ask the officers through you, would the proposed dwelling use the same access of 88 Chaney Road? Would the officers remind me of the distance between the dwellings 90 and 88 where the vehicles will pass? And does that fit with the policy outlined in Charnwood's policies? And just for interest as well, it's been mentioned about the ridge height being higher. Can that be altered at the later stage, or is that in concrete at the moment? That's probably the wrong word to use, concrete, isn't it?
Thank you, Councillor. So in terms of the access, it would be the existing access from 90 Chaveney Road that would be used. So the property on the left-hand side on the plan, as you see before you. So the existing garage to the side of this property would be removed. In terms of the width of the access, just because I can't remember the exact figure off the top of my head, it's on the plan, if you just bear with me a second. It's 4.25 metres wide for the first 5 minutes. Sorry, first 5 metres. And then after that, did say somewhere. Yeah, I think I refer to it in the report. I'm just trying to find the relevant page 111. So mine's not got the page numbers on the box. It's a version. It would be approximately 3 metres, the local highway authority have raised no objections on the based on the width of the access to the site.
Just just ask, does that meet our policy in terms of distance between areas running through, vehicles running through to the new property? And just talk about the proposed ridge height as well, please.
Yeah.
We don't have a specific policy in terms of